Good afternoon. Thank you so much for joining our Child Nutrition Town Hall. This is an interactive conversation. We're going to get started right now, but first want to remind everyone that this is about hearing your questions and comments and give you some brief instructions about how to get your comment in the queue. At any time, press star 3 to ask your question. An operator will briefly take you offline away from the town hall and make sure to get your question in the queue and quickly return you back to the town hall. And then when we move to the Q&A and discussion portion, we'll call on you to ask your question live. So be sure to press star 3 at any time to get a question in the queue. We look forward to hearing from you. Now let's get started. Please welcome Eric Olson, who is the Senior Vice President of Public Policy here at Feeding America.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us this afternoon. We're honored to have Sam Cass with us, as well as our partners from the Academy for Nutrition and Dietetics and Voices for America's Children. September is Hunger Action Month, and it's also Childhood Obesity Awareness Month. So we're going to spend some time today talking about child hunger and about childhood obesity. To me, these are flip sides of the same coin, where we need to ensure access, affordability, and help people to make the right choices for their families. Child hunger and child obesity are both major public health problems facing our country. Over 16 million children, or 1 in 5, are food insecure, and over 1 in 3 kids are obese. The public health and the anti-hunger communities need to find ways to work together to solve both of these problems. The biggest threat we're facing right now here in Washington are cuts to SNAP, or the potential elimination of SNAP, and we're going to talk about that a little bit later. Right now, I'd like to turn this over to Sam Cass, who's our good friend and the White House Assistant Chef and Senior Policy Advisor for Healthy Food Initiatives for the Obama Administration, who will talk about the administration's work in fighting childhood hunger and fighting childhood obesity. Sam?
Thank you so much, Eric. It's great to be on the call today, and thank you for your leadership on these issues. You've been a great partner in all of this. And for everybody on the call, before I begin, I just want to thank you on behalf of the President and the First Lady for the tireless work you do on the front lines day after day and decade after decade. The work you're doing inspires us to no end and is really what the real change that we're seeking is. It's on the grounds in the communities. It's for the people who need it most. And you have our commitment to continue to work diligently, putting everything we have behind these efforts to make them as successful as possible and really transcend where we are when it comes to our kids, their health, and their well-being. You know, I think the numbers sum this up quite simply. And the notion that we have 1 in 5 of kids in America are food insecure at some point during the year, and we have 1 in 3 overweight or obese is devastating and unconscionable in a country as wealthy as ours with as much resources as we have at our disposal. The First Lady has come to these issues as a mother first. In Chicago, well-educated, working hard, but realized struggling to make sure that her kids had access to and were eating the food that they needed to thrive. And that set her on a course to really dedicating her time at the White House to ensuring that all children have access to healthy and affordable food and are given the chance to live the healthy lives that we know they deserve. We see great irony, but great synergy in the notion that so many of our kids who are malnourished or undernourished are also obese. And so much of that comes from families not having access to the food they need. One of the things that really struck the First Lady, you know, very deeply is the fact that families were having to shop at grocery stores and liquor stores, corner stores, gas stations, and liquor stores instead of grocery stores to feed their families. And folks were not being given the simple tools to help make the best decisions, particularly for families that are on a tight budget, about how to put healthy and nutritious food on the table that's going to give their kids a chance. So she's really dedicated from her heart her time here to doing that. So we've worked with grocery stores to offer, to expand and target their growth or refurbish old stores in areas that have no healthy options next 5 years to the magnitude of 1,500 stores, which is going to also bring jobs and resources into communities that so desperately need. We're working to give simple tools and tips so that families understand with a little cooking where possible we can actually save an incredible amount of money and put really healthy food on the table. We are, you know, as Eric mentioned, have worked tirelessly to improve and expand government supports for those in greatest need. First Lady spent basically her first year of Let's Move championing the Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act, and the president, in a moment of a lot of deep debate over the budget and et cetera, took a lot of time to make sure that the Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act was signed into law. This is one of our greatest feeding programs for kids. It's one of our greatest nutrition programs. It is our greatest nutrition program, and it's our greatest hunger program as well. So we've worked to make it easier for kids to and their families to have their kids be eligible for the school lunch program and free and reduced lunch. We've expanded the breakfast program for the first time. We have added resources for the first time in 30 years. There's new resources to implement these changes, and we're dramatically increasing the standards of the food served as part of this program, and that's happening right now. So as kids are returning to school as we speak, school lunch has gotten a lot healthier. And for kids, and the First Lady talks about this all the time, you know, there's millions of kids who get at least half, if not more, of their calories in school. So we have a deep responsibility to ensure that those calories are going to give them as much nutrition as possible to get them through the day. So we're very, very proud of that. You know, there's a lot of debate going on right now about SNAP and other supports, and the President and Secretary Vilsack and First Lady and others have made very clear that in these times of need, the last thing we need to do is to pull the rug out from under those who are just struggling to keep afloat, and committed to continuing to fight to defend those who are most vulnerable. You know, I think a point that Eric made, and something that I've talked about a lot, and I think we need to really, going forward, commit to, is to make sure that the hunger community and the nutrition community is never split and pitted against each other, that we continue to work towards the fundamental principle that all kids deserve the right to have healthy and affordable food, and that we really work diligently to outline an agenda that takes into account both of these issues and make sure that we're always addressing both and that they're never sort of separated. And you have our commitment here, Let's Move, and from the White House to continue to find those opportunities. And you know, the stakes are high. The future, I think, you know, we believe, the First Lady believes, the very future of our nation depends upon us solving these problems. And this is about how our kids learn. It's about how our economy functions. It's about our healthcare system. And it's even about our national security. And so we will continue to push hard and do everything we can to support families to raise kids that are healthy and can really flourish. So thank you for your leadership. Thank you for all the effort and passion that you've brought to this. This is not the – you're not here for the glamour or the fame, but you're here because of all the need that is out there. And it's it really is inspiring to see when I am able to go see this work in action around the country. So, Eric, I'll turn it back over to you, but really, I cannot thank you enough.
Thanks, Sam. You have time to take a couple questions. One of the, we're talking about the impact of something like the Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act, and certainly the questions that are happening right now in Congress with regard to the Farm Bill and other legislation. We have a question in from our e-chat about, in addition to advocating on important pieces of legislation like that, what are some of the things that people can do to get involved in their communities? I know that you all have put together a lot of different resources for food banks and churches and just private citizens. How can people get involved to help make progress on these issues?
Well, we have a number. I mean, there's a plethora of ways. From the Let's Move perspective, we have a couple initiatives that I think really, provide opportunities to address these issues head on. The Let's Move Faith in Communities initiative, we've now partnered with the National League of Cities and some other key organizations that really look to target faith leaders and community leaders. No, we're part of League of Cities, sorry, for that's where I'm going next, the cities and towns. But we've partnered with faith leaders and community leaders from across the country who do so much work to feed people, to advocate on, not only within their organizations, but then to advocate for change across the broader community. There's a simple set of steps that we have to really help foster and facilitate people getting involved and utilize our brand and our effort to help empower people on the local level. So I would go to letsmove.gov and check that out. There's some great tips and resources and ways to connect with groups in your area. There's the Let's Move Cities and Towns initiative, which is really working with the National League of Cities and other partners to help galvanize mayors in this effort as well, and local officials and county members to really take these issues head on as well. And how do we help set up communities that we're going to foster, health across the board? So those are two sub-initiatives that we're really working on. I think, and also in the school context, being present, being engaged, showing up, getting involved in the PTA, these things have a real impact. When schools are hearing and communities are hearing that this is really important to you, that people are watching and paying attention, is my school implementing the new rule? Are we able to, are we expanding the access to the kids who really need it? Are the cafeteria chefs getting the supports they need to do their jobs? This has a real impact, and I think the more positive attention and support we can give schools to seeing this through, that's the kind of work that's going to fundamentally change the environment that our kids are operating in.
Great. I want to remind folks to press *3 at any time to ask your question, but next we'll go to a question from Paula Brewer, who is with the New York Department of Health. Paula, what is your question?
Hi, I know you mentioned that you would be addressing SNAP later, but I just want to know if you were aware of, and if other people are aware of, the report done by the Center for the Study of the Presidency and Congress called SNAP to Health, A Fresh Approach to Strengthening the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. It gets at some of the very goals that you were mentioning and talking about, trying to address not only hunger, but childhood obesity. And I'm just wondering where the First Lady stands, as well as the President, on trying to move the recommendations in this report forward. As we're trying to fight cuts in SNAP, I think we need to couch it in saying that we don't want to cut SNAP, but at the same time we need to look at SNAP in a new light and make some significant changes in SNAP so that we turn it into a stronger nutrition safety net, so that it'll improve the health of the people on SNAP and hopefully move them off of food assistance. So I just wanted to bring that to people's attention and wanted to know where you were regarding the recommendations in the report.
So I have not had a chance to dig through the details of the recommendations. I think the point of ensuring that the choices that people are making who are utilizing SNAP benefits are as healthy as possible is a really important one. I know USDA is doing research around it, trying to understand better, what foods people are buying. We've invested an incredible amount of resources in SNAP education and trying to improve choices. We're utilizing for the first time the new MyPlate, which is showing to be very effective in helping to educate. But there's no question there's a lot of work yet to be done and a lot of information we need to learn. I know USDA is exploring all kinds of different options about how to incentivize and help improve the decisions that are being made. So I cannot comment specifically on that report. I've not had a chance to really dig into it yet. But I think the broader point is well taken.
Great, and now we have a question from Pamela Berger in Houston.
Hello.
Pam, go ahead.
Oh,
hi,
thanks.
Go ahead with your question.
I'm getting a reputation, I fear. I've asked this question before, and I think it is really important in dealing with the folks who would decrease SNAP to certainly emphasize its importance to families throughout America, but to play a little harder ball, I don't know why we are not emphasizing the significant numbers of folks who can't even get into boot camp, which is, after all, supposed to get our children into excellent shape for participating in the military. People with far more experience than anything I have who've served in the military have written about this topic. There have been some reports from fairly senior retirees of the military indicating that, frankly, you know, they can't even get an obese child into shape in 10 weeks, yep. which is what boot camp is. For people like the senators in my state, we have to hit on them from the standpoint of things like national security, because that's what they purport to prioritize. And a nation of food insecure and obese children is not a secure nation. So I'd like to know what, if anything, we plan to do to sort of work that angle as well. It's a less friendly angle, but I think they ought to be made to answer a little bit.
I think it's a really good point. It's actually something that we message all the time, and we've been working quite closely with DOD about all the levers we can pull from that vantage point. You know,
right.
Obesity, if we set hunger aside for a moment, obesity is the number one cause for disqualification for military service. 27% of 17 to 24-year-olds cannot serve. And actually, the Army's had to set up a pre-boot camp for boot camp to get a whole other population through boot camp. We've actually lowered the standards for admittance. Otherwise, those numbers would be significantly higher. It is critical. I've sat across from retired four-star generals who really do think this is one of our nation's greatest national security threats. And I think it is a very powerful argument and one that it really does have an impact. So we do message it all the time. Every time I'm out there, I talk about this because I agree with you. It's a hard-hitting and pretty troubling perspective. So we're going to continue to do that. And the report that you're referring to is called Too Fat to Fight. It's by an organization called Mission Readiness that really outlines a lot of this. I certainly encourage everybody to go check out that report. And they are strong talking points for sure.
Okay, and one final question for Sam comes from Kim Wild. Kim, go ahead with your question.
Hi, Sam. Thanks a lot for pointing out about the national security and the previous caller. I travel the country documenting hunger through video and giving the hungry a voice, but I note that in many communities, they're just not even aware. We're not touching the surface. And my thought was, back in the 80s, we had ABC News hold a national town hall in a series of nights teaching us about AIDS and how to put a condom on a banana. I think that it's time. I'm just wondering, since you're close with the First Lady and the President, if we couldn't encourage them to hold a food insecurity and poverty summit or host a series of town halls so people can see the faces and the voices of what's going on. That will impact things a lot, I think.
I think it's a great idea. I think finding platforms to really shed a greater light and also deepen our impact, because I think right now where we are, we have great breath. I think there's a lot of awareness on a sort of very top line about, you know, issues around hunger and issues around obesity. But how do we deepen that understanding and start translating that into action is our challenge and something that we're certainly going to be dedicated to. You know, I know the First Lady is dedicated to these issues now and for, you know, many, many years to come, because these are issues she's passionate about. So I think it's a great idea. It's something we'll take into consideration. We've heard that before, and I think you're right. There's a good opportunity. So I appreciate that thought.
Well, thank you so much, Sam, for joining us. We really appreciate your time today. And appreciate you being here with us and, of course, all the great work that you all are doing to advance these issues.
Really, it's been a pleasure, and I hope this is just, you know, yet another step in the dialogue, and we look forward to really collaborating as much as possible going forward and really trying to pull as many of these levers as we can. It's so vital. So really, thank you all for the work you're doing.
Great. So now we're going to move on to our roundtable discussion. We're very honored to be joined here. Again, we have Eric Olson with Feeding America, as well as our great partners, Mary Pat Ramondi, who's with the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics, as well as Nadia Beckwith-Stanley, who's with the Children's Alliance in Washington State, which is a member of Voices for America's Children. So to get started, why don't we ask each of you to just briefly talk about what your organization is doing to address the issues of child hunger and child obesity. Eric?
Obviously, the core work of the food banks is to feed hungry people, but what we've seen over the past few years is a growing interest both in child hunger specific programs like after school and summer food and school pantries, as well as food banks really starting to engage in nutrition and tackling childhood obesity. We have a wide range of food banks doing nutrition education and having nutritionists on staff, as well as people engaging in community garden and local and regional food systems. We also move about 500,000 pounds of produce nationally, and we have a commitment to try and expand that to bring fresh food into the network. So we're addressing it in a number of different ways.
And we are starting a new partnership, which I'm very excited about, that was spearheaded by the National Dairy Council, and they invited Feeding America and the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics really to come together and collaborate and be innovative partners on eliminating hunger in the community. Our role will be to start with nutrition education, making sure that we reach the audiences in an engaging way that's realistic. And I know that Feeding America is going to look at more on the food insecurity, how do we deal with it, and then the Dairy Council will continue to be a very active partner as well.
Yeah, what's exciting to me about that partnership is that we have such vast grassroots across the country in all of the organizations, and to really raise awareness about food insecurity as a public health issue and work to get a healthier mix into the network. So it's very exciting.
Yeah, and it'll be a time, too, that we can work with farmers and the dairy farmers, which I know are really struggling right now. So I think it will be great. So we'll have to keep everyone posted on that.
And Nadia, tell us a little bit about your work.
Definitely. So I'm Nadia Beckwith-Stanley. I'm with the Children's Alliance in the other Washington, Washington State. And I'm really pleased I could be a part of this call today. The Children's Alliance is a founding member of Voices for America's Children, and we've been a part of the network for over 25 years. We're also one of the original No Kid Hungry partners with Share a Strength, and we're entering into the fifth year of our strategic plan to end childhood hunger in Washington State. We're a public policy advocacy organization, and so we're fighting to support and promote policies that fight childhood hunger and childhood obesity. We believe that childhood hunger and childhood obesity are two sides of the same coin, and we also know that there are many kids who are facing both hunger and obesity. All the data tells us and all of our experience tells us that school breakfast is a great tool to fight both obesity and hunger alongside a whole host of other challenges that kids face. And as a result, we've prioritized school breakfast. We're really excited about the rollout of the new and improved nutritional guidelines for breakfast, but we also know that with that increased quality comes increased cost. And we're doing our best to help support school districts and individual schools make the necessary transitions in order to be really effective at implementation. Most school nutrition directors worth their weight will tell you that the best way to improve the fiscal health of a school breakfast program is to increase participation. And we feel like it's especially critical right now that we work to make programs strong so they can best implement the new guidelines. We also know that SNAP is a strong, the SNAP program is a key for healthy diets for low-income kids and families, and we're trying to protect SNAP from budget cuts. Other callers and Sam Cass mentioned how important SNAP is, and we totally agree. Food stamps may have been around for a while, but I can tell you that SNAP is an innovative, efficient, and effective program that shelters millions of kids and families from hunger and makes it possible for parents and caretakers across the country to keep their kids healthy and ready for all of life challenges. Half of SNAP recipients are children, so SNAP is a key defense against both childhood hunger and obesity, and as advocates, we're really committed to protecting it. So those are some of the things that we're doing to try to fight both childhood hunger and obesity.
Well, that's a great segue into our next question from Peg Wilson, who's calling from the Greater Washington Food Bank. Peg, go ahead with your question.
My question is, with all, everybody talking, I've agreed with them. There's many things out there, but I'm the president of the food bank here in Washington County, and I would like to say we need more information out there on helping the children. We have to educate the parents first, if there's parents. Some of these children don't have parents, but my question is, why don't they get more information out that we can pass out to the schools, the parents and stuff? We need literature out there to educate everybody. We seem to be able to help the foreign countries with their children, making donations, but as I said, sometimes I sort of feel we have forgot that we're Americans and we should be helping our own first. So many children don't have, I always feel bad thinking any child would have to go to bed hungry. So my question is, I think we need more information out there to educate everybody. Thank you, and I enjoyed the listening to all the things from food banks and on to all these other programs. We all have to work together, and I think we're all doing a good job, and I really appreciate this chance of being on here, and I think it's a great thing. But my question is, when are we going to get some literature we can give out and educate the person that really is not involved?
Well, I can give you some examples. This is Mary Pat, and I have some programs that I have worked with that are really exciting and terrific, both at the school level. So, for example, we have a program with the Academy that we have RD coaches, or registered dietitian coaches, and what they do is they work with the students one-on-one to improve their eating habits, and it's been highly successful. They've counseled over 10,000 students, and talking to some of these RD coaches, I realized they really have built the relationship and trust, and so these are kids that feel comfortable telling the dietitian when they go home there is no food, and so the dietitian is able to work with them on the food pantries. The other great one, and I think it brings into what you're saying about the parents' involvement, is Share Our Strength and Cooking Matters, and they have done an incredible job of getting parents and kids together by learning how to cook and making it fun. And one example I can give on that is in the state of Minnesota, when they launched their Cooking Matters program, they did it with Head Start moms, and believe it or not, they had a 92% graduation rate in January, when 6 weeks of classes, you know what January is like in Minnesota, and kids and parents came together to do that. So I think there is a need, and I think that getting more of these programs out there.
Thank you, Mary Pat. Next, let's go to a question from Nick Marino. Nick, go ahead with your question.
Hello?
Hi, Nick. Go ahead.
Hey. I was just I'm working for a company down in Dallas, Texas, and we're trying to help end hunger in America. And we're a resource that people come through something that they do every single day, like dining. And my thing is that what are some other ways besides monetary donations that people can be making an impact on throughout the country? We're based in Dallas, and right about 2 miles away from our office is actually a very one of the wealthiest neighborhoods in the entire country. And 2 miles to the west, to 2 miles to the east of us, is a food pantry that has a line wrapped around the entire building every single Wednesday through Saturday morning. And these are people that, I mean, have lost jobs and stuff, and not everybody that can just go and make a monetary donation. So what are some other things that people can do? And sometimes it's hard even with time and stuff. People have kids and children and stuff that they can't get out to these food pantries to help.
Well, that's a great question, Nick. One of the, there's a couple things that you can do. One is really engage in advocacy, letting your congressman know that you care about hunger and that they shouldn't cut the federal nutrition safety net. We really need strong government programs as well as a strong charitable system to fight hunger in this country. And right now we're facing severe budget threats in the Farm Bill. And so to let your local politicians know that they shouldn't be cutting the SNAP program and that they should be providing support for the charitable food systems to make sure that we have enough food to feed people. Nadia, do you want to add anything on that?
Definitely. I think advocacy is key. I mean, we have amazing organizations in basically every state in the union working to protect investments in anti-hunger programs at both the state and the federal level. And it's really key to get involved with your state level and federal and your national orgs that are advocating to protect protect anti-hunger programs and protect health nutrition programs and protect state funding for emergency food networks as well.
The other thing that's useful in addition to advocacy is really raising awareness in your community about who about hunger and the scope of hunger, and you know, so encouraging your friends and family to get to know their local food banks and the face of hunger in their community. We have on our website, we have a project called Map the Meal Gap, where you can look at the scope of hunger in every county in the country and see it, so that we really help raise awareness and understanding that there are these hungry people and that we need to take action together to end hunger in America.
I can also echo that the Map the Meal Gap is a great tool. As someone on the state level who uses it regularly, when I go in to talk to state legislators or talk to other folks in my community, it's incredibly easy to use and quite pretty as well. And you can pull out some really great resources that speak specifically to what's going on in your community, so you can tell your neighbor, yes, we do have hungry children, we do have hungry families, and you can do something about it.
Thank you so much. We're now going to take a question from Joseph Gilbert. Joseph, go ahead with your question.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to know what you came up with as the best way to educate parents about making good choices for their children's nutritional intake. You know, when people get in the habit of eating a certain way, when they were raised up in a certain way, it's a big challenge for them to make better choices later on after they're grown up. And especially with all the corporate advertising for junk food and things like that, and you know, how can we get people to make better choices? And the next thing is, I'd like to also know, what does SNAP stand for? Could you explain that?
Sorry about SNAP is the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. It's the federal food stamps.
And I can add maybe something about the education. We're doing a lot more engaging, innovative education and finding it that giving people the experience is the best way to do it. And you're right that the way the culture and the way that people are raised really influences their cooking and their eating habits, but we know that we can do some great behavior changes. Some of our programs that have worked is SNAP Ed. So SNAP, being what you just learned it is, and Ed being the education, offered to SNAP participants, and the outcomes of that program are just coming out and are very strong that people have been able to make behavior change. And to be really honest, most people don't know how to eat healthy. They think they do, and it isn't only the SNAP population, it isn't only low-income people. If you ask most people how many calories a day they need, I will tell you, they will tell me anywhere from 5,000 to 50,000, which I find is kind of interesting. There's other programs too, like I said, Share Our Strength and has the Cooking Matters. And the other thing that we'll be looking at as a group with Feeding America and the National Dairy Council is there some other new ways that we can use innovation in education? Perhaps it's going to be through technology. Perhaps it's going to be peer training or train the trainer. So you're right, education and training and knowledge really empowers people.
This is Nadia, and I'd add one more thing, that I think context really plays a big role. As Sam Cass mentioned earlier, a lot of families don't have access to the basic tools to feed their families well. And so initiatives that bring healthy fruits and vegetables into schools, into communities, even in corner stores, are a really great first start, because folks can't make the right choices if the right choices aren't even available to them.
So again, want to take another question from our e-chat function. This is a question about what are the opportunities and threats that you see here in Washington to making progress on addressing childhood hunger and childhood obesity. Eric, do you want to start us off?
Well, as we mentioned in the earlier answer, the Congress right now is considering the Farm Bill, and both the House and Senate have cuts to the SNAP program. Which is the really, we call it the first line of defense against hunger in this country. Particularly the House cuts would be devastating for children. They would remove 2 to 3 million individuals from the SNAP program, and an additional 500,000 households would lose $90 per month in benefits. Included in that would be 300,000 children would lose their free school meals when their family is cut from SNAP. So we have a lot of work to do here in D.C. and need everybody raising their voices with their congressmen and telling them not to cut SNAP when the Congress does the Farm Bill. And then really beyond that, later this year, there is what's called the fiscal cliff coming with budget and sequestration, and there could be major, major threats to SNAP during that process, as well as the WIC program, which faces a potential significant cuts later in December under the sequestration budget agreement that was reached last year. So it's really important for everybody on the line and their and all of their organizations and communities to stay engaged and keep raising their voices to Congress that they should not be cutting these programs that fight hunger at this time.
And I would like to add to it my disappointment on the Farm Bill not being passed, because I think at many levels it was bipartisan approach to a solution. And we as an organization were part of something that was headed up by Feeding America, and very proud to be part of the nutrition priorities, where we had over 100 different agencies sign on to what we thought were the most important ones. And to add to Eric's on sequestration, another one, even though this is about childhood hunger, is that the Older Americans Act, Congregate Dining and Meals on Wheels, is also at risk for being cut. So we're hoping that in the next week something will be done, or else in the lame duck session.
Nadia, do you have anything to add?
Well, I think that our perspective as a state-based organization is probably a little different. We've decided that we are willing to wait for a farm bill that doesn't cut SNAP. We are, as was mentioned before, a heat and eat state, which means that our state uses an innovative strategy to make sure that families don't have to choose between heating their homes and feeding their children. And we feel like our vulnerable kids and families can't afford a cut to their SNAP benefits. And we've put together, as many states across the nation have, a coalition of advocates who span everywhere from public health to school nutrition to emergency food partners to stand together and say we will not accept cuts to food stamps.
And now we have a question from Timmy, and I apologize if I mispronounced your last name, Gustafson. Go ahead with your question, Timmy.
Thank you. I'm Timmy Gustafson. I'm a registered dietitian and a blogger. We need to teach parents first, but we must meet them where they are. That means explaining basic facts of dietetics in simple and easy-to-understand terms and ways that can be translated into immediate and effective action. So as parents and caregivers, we are the gatekeepers. So my question is, how do we explain the importance of healthy eating to families who do not know where to begin to make better choices? In other words, how do we teach them where to or what to look for when they shop? How to modify their recipes at home once they get those foods into the kitchen, and even when they're eating out, the better choices. For example, in the newspaper this morning, McDonald's has now agreed that they're going to put all the data for calories, et cetera, on their menus, and others will be following shortly, I'm sure. But how do we teach people? How do we teach the parents who are the enablers or gatekeepers until these children are old enough to make their own choices or go to school and learn, hopefully, nutrition at school?
So well, I think we
how do we
can do it. We can do it a couple ways, and one of the ways that we have been able to do it successfully is in the WIC program. The WIC program has a significant amount of nutrition education and has found that it's been very effective. I agree with you on the nutrition education. We have to go where the people are to make it meaningful. And one of the programs that I saw that I was so impressed with was in the Hispanic community, where they have Fiesta de Saludes, they call them, and they are home parties for parents where people go in and have a night together. It's very festive, and they learn about nutrition education. So those are some of the ways to do it. Other ways that we continue to do it is, how do we meet them? Is perhaps even in, through technology. We know people are busy. We know that sometimes some of the WIC moms do well by having technology visit their homes at midnight and give them some information about nutrition education. We need to make sure, too, that some of our programs like SNAP Ed are fully funded. I will tell you that the SNAP participation rate has skyrocketed, but the SNAP Ed budget has been cut. So it really puts a strain on people to be innovative and deliver these services and education.
If I can just add on to that, the meeting clients where they are, I mean, that's something that the food banks do. So looking at really user-friendly, easy-to-understand, bilingual recipes, for example, with the foods that they'll get through the food bank or from the federal commodity programs to help clients do better. They'll have some of the more innovative things going on where they merge. When you're coming to the food bank, they'll do nutrition cooking classes with the recipes right there to help people see that this is easy for them to do and build the habits over time. I also think the gardening things are really interesting, getting the children connected to growing food and seeing where food comes from, and eating different foods and then bringing that back home is another way to do that. So I find that to be a really exciting area.
I would also add that children are great teachers. Talking to kids about nutrition education is a great step in making sure that nutrition education makes it into the home. Kids share the things they learn with their parents. They're excited to share the things that they learn with their parents. So it's important to talk to the kids, too.
We have now we have a question from Bonnie. Go ahead with your question, Bonnie.
I'm one of the RDs that's involved in Let's Move Now. We're actually coming to the White House next Tuesday. But I was really just curious about some more programs that the Academy has going to really highlight the RD in terms of getting her involved, getting us involved in more programs, because it seems like Let's Move was very exercise-oriented initially, and now we're moving more into what nutrition can do. So I was just curious about some other programs that are underway.
I can answer that, and thanks, Bonnie, for bringing it up. But if Sam was still on the phone, he would be talking about that he's coming to our annual meeting in Philadelphia next month, and he will have a full session on Let's Move and how dietitians can get involved in it. And you might be aware of the fact that there is now a registered dietitian as part of SAM's staff, which is quite exciting. And I agree with you, in some of the ways we have highlighted it at our public policy workshop, which was held this spring, we had a panel of Let's Move dietitians. So we're heading up Let's Move Childcare, Let's Move Salad Bars to Work. We are heading up Let's Move Cities and Towns. We also have a lot of members in our school nutrition DPG working on the Let's Move ideas. We've had one of our dietitians who works for WebMD host a session with the First Lady. In addition, we have our hunger and environmental dietitians working very hard on Let's Move as our pediatric practice group. And finally, we do have, with the Partnership for Healthier America, there is a registered dietitian on the staff there, too. So I think we have made inroads, and we are delighted you're coming next Tuesday.
The other thing that I would add on to that is one of the things that we're trying to do with the partnership with A&D and the Dairy Council and Feeding America is to activate partnerships at a local level around both fighting hunger and improving nutrition. To bring the communities together rather than treating them as separate. So I think that will be another way to link both childhood hunger and child obesity.
I think that's a great point, and I think what we'll try to do, too, from our standpoint, is bring our students involved in it. Get the students, whether they're our dietetic students or our dietetic interns, in early and be part of the solution. So that's very excited.
And bring more dietitians and students into the food bank, help them volunteer,
yes.
And raise the level of conversation between the communities about how we can work together.
And to be on the board.
Yes.
That was really eye-opening for me, being on the board.
Yep.
Well, we want to thank all of you for participating in today's conversation. And before we go, I want to make sure that you're aware of a couple of ways that you can get involved. It is Hunger Action Month and Childhood Obesity Awareness Month. And to that end, and as to our conversation today about engaging our elected officials, there are different ways that you can very easily send a message to your members of Congress. We would encourage you to go to hungeractioncenter.org, where you can easily send an email to all of your elected officials and tell them why you care about these issues. We also have a postcard campaign on Feeding America's Facebook page. If you go to Facebook and search for Feeding America, you can send a postcard to Congress and again, tell them why child hunger and child obesity are important to you and the importance of protecting the federal nutrition program. So thank you again to all of our speakers and partners, and thank you so much for joining us to be part of today's conversation.